Welcome into another edition of the Dana and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I am Rick, and for this edition of the podcast, take two, I am joined by the legend Brian Snow. Dan not with us this time. We had recorded this same podcast, or at least a similar version of it, earlier this week, and then after a little bit over an hour of talking to you two clowns, I got an error message, and it said it, you know, hadn't recorded, so here we are. Take two, back again.
You know how valuable my time is, and you just wasted it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, you do podcasts with me, so clearly your time can't be that valuable. But I will take no more of it than I have to. Let's jump right into things. Brian, big news for Xavier in recruiting the last few weeks, and it has to start with Daniel Ramsey. Landed a commitment from the 2019 big man out of Georgia, a four-star prospect, and we had talked a lot about it coming out of the spring. It really felt like he was kind of the guy they had zeroed in on. When July came around, it was clear that was the guy that they wanted in the post. He was a guy they wanted to add, and they were able to get the job done. What do you think was the key throughout that recruitment and getting Ramsey committed?
I think, you know, it was a lot of consistency from Xavier, starting with Jonas Hayes, then going to Travis Steele. Then you include Ben Johnson, and even later in the process, Dante Jackson. As Daniel said, he felt like he got to know the entire Xavier staff, and I think that was a factor. And then obviously the job Jonas did is tremendous. And then, you know, Xavier really, really was persistent, built a great relationship with Daniel and his parents, had a great official visit. Tyreek Jones apparently did a tremendous job hosting him. And, you know, after the kid, Daniel's a really smart, like I'm talking Stanford type grades, really thoughtful kid. He decided, you know, I don't want to commit on the visit, you know, like maybe I'm ready, but let's wait 8 hours, which is basically what he did. Talked it over with his dad, who didn't get a chance to make the visit, and they decided, you know, okay, we'll do this on Monday, and we'll get it done, and that's exactly what happened.
We'll talk a little bit more about Jonas Hayes and the job the entire staff has done recruiting this summer, but staying on the topic of Ramsey, his game, strengths, weaknesses, how do you see it playing out when he arrives on campus?
You know, Daniel's a kid. I think he can contribute as a freshman. I'm not sure he's like a 20, 25-minute a game guy as a freshman, or at least not in a perfect world. You know, Tyreek may pick up 6 fouls in 8 seconds, and, you know, he's going to have to. But, and I know there's only 5 fouls in college basketball, people. But, you know, I think realistically what you're looking at is 10 to 15 minutes, run the court, maybe hit a mid-range jumper or two, rebound. I think he's a better rim protector than he's given credit for. And then he plays hard, gives energy. Not a guy who I think you throw it to on the block, at least not until a couple years from now. But he'll run the court, set screens, pick and pop to the mid-range, and also pick and roll where he's going to, you know, dive to the rim and he can finish with dunks. He's not super explosive with a standing vertical right now. But he's a kid with a big frame, but he's not super strong yet. I think as he gets strong, he's really going to get that explosion, because when he gets a little bit of a runway, gets a step or two, he does have that explosion. So I think he's a good player who can contribute right away, but maybe not be a difference maker early on.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. When you go and you watch his film, it's kind of interesting because you'll see him throw down like a lot of dunks, especially when he gets out running in transition. Or the other thing that I like about his game, where I think there may be some upside, although this is sometimes something that's tough to translate because you don't get a lot of space in the Big East when you're talking about big men and them catching, you know, 6 to 8 feet from the basket. But he has that game where he'll catch in the mid-range and straight line drive you like 2 or 3 dribbles, just like a jab step and go or a rip through. He has pretty good quickness. And when he does that, he can play above the rim. And then at other times, you see him catch with no one around him, standing vertical right under the rim, and he gets hung. Like, he can't get the ball over the rim. So I think that is an interesting point, that as he gets stronger, it'll be interesting to see if he gets a little more explosive with that standing vertical. But still, overall, I think he's a good athlete. Brian, is there anything you're really concerned about with his game, any weaknesses that you think you could pick on?
Needs to get stronger, definitely. Then, as I said, you know, I don't think his footwork's real good. In the post, he's not like some kids just naturally, you throw it to him and they kind of know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have that if he's not looking at the rim. So, you know, I think he's going to need a lot of time in that regard.
Yeah, and it's not like he's not like slow and awkward. He actually moves pretty quickly, but it's like when he starts trying to make a move. It's like he doesn't have that natural feel as a scorer for how to go about. He doesn't have a lot of game. It's just he has tools, but it's not polished yet. So certainly a lot of work there. And, I mean, when you think about the way Xavier has developed big men recently, specifically with Mike Pegues, you'd be like, oh, in great shape. So adding Jonas Hayes to the mix, I think, you know, he'll get that chance to show how well he can develop big men. He's got a great reputation, and we'll really see the work with Daniel Ramsey, because I think Ramsey has a lot of tools and a lot of potential if they can get him to reach that. Brian Dwan,
one thing I think we should mention, Rick, that I didn't mention,
yeah,
he can switch screens. And Xavier wants to switch screens 1 through 5. They truly believe in it. He can do it, and I think that's a key factor.
Yeah, and again, I think that you go back to, like, he doesn't have great footwork on offense, but we're not saying, like, he can't move. He can definitely move. He's certainly mobile. The other big news recently with recruiting, and it's not the 2019 class, it's in 2020, but Xavier landed another big commitment recently, and that was from Dwan Odom, a point guard, lead guard in that class, ranked 38th in the country right now. Brian, I think you told a good story about sort of how the day his commitment went down and how you kind of found out it was going to happen when you saw Travis Steele in an airport or getting on a plane. Could you sort of retell that story that you told on the board?
Yeah, so every recruiting period, or at least in the past going forward, this appears to be changing, runs Wednesday through Sunday. The Sunday of the final day is the worst day of basketball that's ever been played, because kids are tired and everybody's been in Vegas. And if you get a bunch of adults and a bunch of kids in Vegas for 4 days, you can imagine what that fifth day is like. So I always fly back on the red eye Saturday night. And as you can imagine, coaches, especially millionaire coaches, they're not big fans of red eye flights. So I knew if a head coach was on my flight, that meant he was going home, because a lot of coaches will skip that Sunday as well. Well, I see Steele at the gate, and I'm like, what the heck are you doing here? He goes, I'm going to Orlando. And I'm like, wait a minute. The head coach is not taking a red eye from Vegas to Orlando, where he's connecting in Atlanta, unless there's a specific reason why. And he just kind of smiles at me when I ask who's he going to watch, and he doesn't really tell me. But then I start looking at the schedule, and I know who Xavier's recruiting for the most part, and I'm like, Dwan Odom's the only kid there. So I'm like, wait a minute, this doesn't smell right. A coach is definitely not doing this for his own health. Like, he's not just going to watch a 2020 kid unless that kid's about to commit. And I'm like, wait a minute, is Dwan Odom about to commit? And I placed a few calls, and I found out, and I was told, I wasn't necessarily told he was committing, but I was told you should be around your computer after Dwan plays his game at 2:00. And I said, And that's how I kind of figured it out. And basically what Dwan told Travis is, if you're willing to fly on a red-eye flight on the final day to watch me play, I'm committing to you. And that happened.
Yeah, and it was a little bit of a surprise for me. I'm not surprising that Dwan Odom, Xavier was in really good shape or that he might commit there. But, you know, I had written in the Nuggets basically a week before he committed that if Xavier's going to make a big splash in the 2020 class, Dwan Odom and Dawson Garcia are kind of the two guys that they're in a really good spot with early. So definitely keep an eye on them. I knew they were in great shape at that point. I did not necessarily expect a commitment that quickly. So pretty, I think it just speaks to how hard this staff is working, because they have such a big 2019 class right now that they're trying to fill. They land a guy like Daniel Ramsey, so clearly they're not slacking on those priority recruits in 2019. And yet, they're able to reel in an early commitment from a 2020 kid. So not only were they laying groundwork and evaluating these 2020 kids, but they've put in enough work to where they had established a relationship as a new staff with a top 40 prospect in the country to the point that he was willing to commit. I think it says a lot about the work that the staff has already put in this spring and summer.
And I'm not trying to roll anybody under the bus when I say this, but I also think it's pretty clear what Kaiser Gates thinks of Travis Steele. Because I think Kaiser had an up and down experience at Xavier.
100%, yeah.
I think that's fair. Yet Kaiser pushed Dwan Odom, pushed Xavier quite hard on Dwan Odom, and said, you know, you really need to go there. You need to play for this guy. He's a great guy, et cetera, et cetera. Without that, Xavier doesn't get Dwan Odom right now. Now, maybe they get him in the future, but they don't have him right now.
Okay, so Dwan Odom is ranked 38th in the country. What, Brian, makes him a top 40 guard? What can he do that really stands out?
First thing is, he is one explosive dude. And then he's a high character leader, which is huge at the point guard position, and he can get into the lane whenever he wants. Then he's got good size. Right now he's not that good a defender, but because his job's not to foul, which is the job of a high school player, don't foul. But he'll be a tremendous one in college. And the other thing I didn't realize before about July is he's a really, really good passer, has a great feel for the game, plays with great pace, needs to work on the outside jumper. That's the weakness right now, but he's got everything else, and I do mean everything else. He has a chance to be the best guard Xavier's ever recruited.
Yeah, and I mean, in terms of athleticism, I've been told when he arrives at Xavier, he'll immediately be maybe the best athlete they've ever recruited, and if not, it's right there with, like SF Terps or one or two other guys. He is as athletic as anyone that's ever been in the program.
Yeah, he's definitely more athletic than Q and Paul at the same stage, way more athletic than Najee at the same stage. Now, Najee, I don't know how the heck he got as athletic as he did, but Quentin Gooden's not nearly the athlete DeJuan Odom is at the same stage.
Yeah, it's kind of a frightening thought, honestly. Brian, does this change anything in 2019 and how they approach the class, in your opinion?
I don't think it does.
But maybe gives them a little more leeway?
You don't feel the pressure, I would say. But the guards they've locked in on are the same guys, and they're kind of, even though Harlan Beverly's not a combo guard, you could call him a combo guard, he's a combo type guard. Jalen Gaffney, I would say those are the two top guard targets right now. He's definitely a combo guard, but those were their two targets before they got DeJuan.
Right.
And then you add in Demir Bishop, who's kind of a two guard. I don't think, it's changed anything, but it takes kind of a sense of urgency away where you feel like, all right, if we don't get one of these guys, the world's not coming to an end.
Yeah, without a doubt. Before we get into sort of what's next in 2019 and talk about some of those other names, I do want to talk about the coaching staff real quick because, Jonas Hayes now, he's landed Elias King, he's landed DeJuan Odom, he's landed Daniel Ramsey as the lead recruiter on all those guys. You can't say enough good things about the job that guy has done since he's been brought onto staff. But Brian, as you mentioned, one of kind of the interesting things about the tone Travis Steele has set for the way the staff is going to recruit is you heard Daniel Ramsey say they were the only school with four or five coaches to be contacting me consistently before, during the month of July and throughout. So they are clearly attacking this thing as a team and doing a good job of it. How do you think that's rare, or is that something every staff does? Like, what's sort of your take on that and just them sort of tag teaming everything?
I would say it's extremely rare in a basketball recruit. Extremely rare. Now, and it's there's a lot of first of all, it's very difficult to pull off, and that's why. As one AU coach told me, and this wasn't related to anyone Xavier was recruiting, actually, it's just kind of a general statement. He said the key in recruiting is to be persistent without being annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And when you got three, four coaches contacting a kid, that's a tough balance to strike. So what you have is you have Xavier coaches here who are really communicating with each other, like, okay, hit Daniel about this tonight, or I hit him today, you wait till tomorrow afternoon, or Steele's calling him tonight, so we're good, but let's make sure you follow up in the morning and I'll follow up in the evening. And, it doesn't have to be long conversations, it doesn't have to be a FaceTime, just kind of, little building exercises, maybe even, all right, I'm going to talk to dad today, you make sure you talk to the kid. Things like that. And that takes a lot of staff communication and a lot of staff camaraderie to pull off. And also it takes a lot of trust and these guys to put their egos aside.
Mm-hmm.
What you run into a lot of times is guys get very territorial over who they recruit. And I'm not saying this is even a bad thing. It's just a reality. Like, there'll be situations where, some assistant A is recruiting a kid and assistant B and C, the first time they'll ever talk to the kid is on his visit to campus.
Without question. And that's like you said, it's a lot of ego with that. And it's a lot of bias, like not anything conscious, but just like it's your kid. He's the guy you liked. You saw him first. You've seen him more. You know more about him and his situation and his family. So you tend to like your guys more. So it really takes them putting all of that aside for them to pull off this tag team recruiting thing. And at least, look, we may be making a bigger deal out of it than it is in reality, but we heard Daniel Ramsey specifically mention it, so I think it's at least interesting and worth talking about.
Yeah, and like I know for a fact, you know, with like DeJuan, like part of it is DeJuan Odom, you know, Steele did a fantastic job, Jonas did a fantastic job, but also, you know, like Dante knows Alan Payne. Alan Payne's dad's best friend is DeJuan's coach. Well, you know, Dante communicated with Alan. Alan says, hey, Dante's a great guy. You know, here's his number. You know, like there's other things that go into this. And, you know, they've done a great job of pulling it off so far. And time will tell how effective it's going to be in the future. You know, past performance is not indicative of future success. But, you know, I think it's one thing that's very important to Travis. He wants staff cohesion. And this is one way to do it.
It seems like a lot of times the third assistant coach that's brought onto a staff, especially when you're in a place like Xavier, where that third assistant usually is going to, you know, be a guy who's coming from a lower level or a newer coach, as like Dante Jackson, the new hire, is. At least the way Chris Mack approached it, it seemed like a lot of time it was a guy that had certain connections that didn't have, or really sort of had a recruiting slant to his job description. He was definitely there to try to land them players, and in a way it felt like, you know, like I thought the last staff they had was recruiting really well, but those guys all had their players, so to speak. Dante Jackson comes in without much to speak of in terms of clout on the AAU scene and on the recruiting scene, and he's also very inexperienced in terms of being a college basketball coach. What do you think he really brought to the table, and do you think this was kind of what Travis had in mind, is that I know I can get a guy who truly loves Xavier, is all about the team, and will put his ego and everything else aside to sacrifice for the good of the entire staff? Do you think that was like part of the mindset in hiring Dante?
I think that was honestly the biggest thing. One, Travis has a great deal of respect for Dante, having coached him and just been around him, having worked with him in, you know, I think Dante was technically a GA, but still worked with him. Mm-hmm. Travis really prioritized Dante's energy on the court, his presence as a coach, and the fact that he's a tremendous communicator. You know, Dante's someone, you know, growing up as a black kid in Greenfield, Ohio, you experience some things now. And, you know, he can walk into any living room and feel comfortable and probably make any, you know, mom, dad, kid feel comfortable as well, because he can relate to, you know, any group of people. And that's a rare thing. I'm not just talking college basketball. I'm talking any aspect of life that, you know, you can transcend so many demographics and be comfortable and make people feel comfortable. So I think Dante has that ability. And then also, like you said, love of Xavier, you know, like Dante, whatever Dante hears to help Xavier, that's what Dante is going to do. And it's not going to be about him. It's not going to be about ego. And I think Travis felt with two experienced guys like Jonas and Ben, who are, you know, proven recruiters, proven coaches, that you have that added piece of a guy who's going to do anything for Xavier, along with his presence as a coach and his communication ability, that I think he felt it was the right hire.
Okay, so let's look forward to 2019. I think, you know, they've got two guys in the fold with Elias King and Daniel Ramsey now, a really skilled, versatile wing and a big man, which they certainly needed. I think they're still going to take at least two or three more players. What do you think what's the biggest priority at this point, or is it kind of just one of everything now?
Yeah, I think it's kind of one big, another big type player of 4-5. They would prefer one guard. And again, I covered them earlier, you know, Harlan Beverly, Jalen Gaffney, you know, Demir Bishop, and then kind of one other player. Now, maybe this could be Trey Jackson, a versatile forward. Maybe it could be Brandon Newman, a shooter. It could be any sort of thing. It could be, you know, maybe even another big if the right dominoes fall. So I think they want at least another two, and then maybe another three.
There are some visits starting to be scheduled now, or at least some other kids saying, you know, I'm thinking about it. I'm definitely going to visit this school. I don't have a date set. What's the latest you're hearing in terms of guys that are going to visit? I mean, Zach Fremantle, we know, is certainly visiting soon.
Yeah. First of all, this weekend is the transfer from Sam Cunliffe from Kansas. We can cover that one after this segment, but that's going to happen this weekend. Mm-hmm. Monday, Brandon Newman is set to make an unofficial visit. Brandon Newman's probably the best shot maker in the Midwest, kid from Valparaiso, Indiana, who's going to go to Montverde Academy and actually be a high school teammate with Harlan Beverly. He's visiting Monday, he just told me. Then all the players, I believe, are back on Thursday. Now, some are still on campus, and you know, Cunliffe's going to be interacting with players, but some are still on campus. But I believe everybody will be back by Thursday, at which point Trey Jackson and Zach Fremantle are set to visit. I don't know who's coming first. I've heard different versions of reality on who's coming which 2 days between Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But there'll be back-to-back visits is my understanding. It would not shock me if Fremantle comes in first. It would not. Wouldn't shock me if Trey Jackson comes in first. And I don't necessarily know that there's a rationale to why one would come in first or one would come in after. I don't know. And then Caden Shedrick also let me know he plans to schedule a visit to Xavier very shortly. Now, is that I'm going to schedule it shortly or is that I'm going to take it shortly? I do not know. But Caden is very interested in Xavier as well. So you've got that locked in. I believe Demir Bishop will be visiting. David Johnson's going to visit unofficially near the end of the month. And then look for Harlan Beverly and Jalen Gaffney more to be end of September.
So, I mean, this thing is definitely going to get interesting with some of their top prospects as they start to make these official visits. And we'll see, you know, they look like they're getting in decision mode or do they start taking more visits? This is when things really start to heat up. And I think, you know, obviously they have a wing forward in Elias King. They have a big man in Daniel Ramsey. So the most interesting position group right now is the guards. And it's interesting because Xavier's in a good spot with a lot of different guards, it seems like. But you could easily tell me they're not getting any of those guys. Like, there is definitely big-time competition for each one of those kids. Who would you say they have the best chance at right now? Is it Jalen Gaffney?
I think so. I think so. Now, that visit to Florida is going to be huge. Florida's got deep ties. You know, his AAU coach, Brian Klatsky, who, by the way, is a great friend of mine and a terrible fantasy football player, he graduated from Florida. He has deep ties to Florida. So, you know, he's taken those kids down to Florida before. So he's gotten to know those coaches, get to know the campus. So that's a big visit. And then after that, I believe, it's UConn, I believe, for him. So obviously UConn's a pretty darn good program. Then I think he'll visit Xavier maybe after that or maybe 2 weeks later. But, you know, right now Xavier's got a good working dialogue with him. The kid really likes Xavier, loved his unofficial visit. So we'll see what happens there. But I think they've got a really good shot at Jalen and, you know, maybe even a better shot than they have with Harland.
And you've mentioned Harlan a few times, so what do you think is the latest with Harlan Beverly's recruitment?
Currently sounds like, first of all, he's not doing anything for a little while. So anyone like looking for Harlan Beverly news, it's just not going to happen. He's going to get down to Montverde in a week or two, down in North Florida, at which point he's going to visit Florida unofficially. And then he's going to begin scheduling official visits once he gets down there. I think Baylor will get one. Xavier will get one. Louisville's likely to get one. Indiana's kicking the tires. They could get one. Again, Harlan's not a kid making one official visit. That's just not going to happen. Barring a major surprise, that's just not going to happen. So we'll see what happens there with Harlan. Could Michigan State get a token visit? Sure, but I don't see him going there. But Baylor's a major threat. Baylor's been on Harlan as long as anybody. They have deep ties to his father. So, you know, if you're Xavier, you're saying at best we're a 50-50 ball.
Right.
So that's kind of the situation with Harlan, and he's got a slower timetable, I think.
One of the other names that, you know, during the spring, it seemed like it was almost a done deal to Xavier, or at least it was getting really close. Armon Franklin has been talked about a lot. You gave a pretty good update on the message board just recently, but some people haven't checked it, or some people might not subscribe yet, which you obviously should. Subscribe to MusketeerReport.com so you can ask us questions on the message board. But Armon Franklin, where do things stand now with his recruitment? Because it seems like things are fading a little bit between him and Xavier.
Yeah, I would say Xavier's he's got a top three, and I would say Xavier's third. I think Purdue's first and then Indiana second. And I think there's a much bigger gap from 2 to 3 than there is from 1 to 2. I think the kid was close to committing. It didn't happen. And, you know, maybe Xavier stepped off the gas a little bit. Maybe they didn't. Maybe Harlan just decided, I like these other two options better. It's tough to really know, but I would say the mutual interest has gone down. And I think it's legitimately on both sides. I think, you know, Xavier, they would love him. And, like, if Armon wanted to commit tomorrow, trust me, they'd be jumping up and down. But, you know, I think they also see the writing on the wall. I mean, the kid's been to your campus 7 times or 5 times or 6 times, whatever it is, in a year. What's he going to see on the unofficial visit? You know, it's kind of like all you're going to do is see the same stuff and like it less. So I just think they've seen the writing on the wall that this might be trending away from them, and you know that's the nature of recruiting.
What's your take on the Louisville guard situation right now in terms of the prospects they're recruiting in 2019?
That's a really good question. I'll still believe that David Johnson doesn't go there when I see David Johnson not going there.
And that's obviously why I'm asking you that question, but yeah. It seems like they have some other guards that they're certainly prioritizing as well in this class.
Yeah, and you know, if you're Louisville right now, you can't take David Johnson for granted. So you got to try to figure it out. You know, they want Jamias Ramsey. They want Rocket Watts. They want a few guys.
They're in there, Harlan Beverly.
Harlan Beverly, yeah. So it's going to be interesting. I don't know. It's just too – at the end of the day, recruits tend to do what's easy. And I know people, like, get offended by that. Like, oh, you should make yourself uncomfortable. Like, you know, if something's really easy, a lot of times means that's right. And it's really easy for David Johnson to go to Louisville. You know, he's 10 minutes away, grew up – you know, he kind of grew up half UK, half UL. But, you know, like 10 minutes away from his house, he was obviously comfortable with the program. He committed there. He's been comfortable with Mac for a while because Mac recruited him at Xavier. It's like, I just think that's going to happen. But David wants to, like, feel the attention and be recruited and you know, not be considered a done deal. But then again, you know, the kid's going out of his way to visit Xavier and Georgia again, so you never know. But I think if you're Louisville, you have to feel okay about it, but not great about it.
Yeah, but I do think, you know, if something changes here, like if Louisville lands a commitment from another guard, someone decides they're ready to pull the trigger, and David Johnson just hasn't gotten to that point yet. I mean, I would imagine, you know, depending on who that other guard is, Chris Mack may just call David Johnson and say, hey, last chance or you're done. Although we've seen Chris Mack kind of be loyal to the guy that is hot right now, you know, sort of looking back to the Xavier Simpson, Quentin Gooden situation when he was at Xavier. So I'm interested to see how that plays out, because if something does happen and Louisville takes another guard, I don't see David Johnson then committing to Louisville. And it seems Xavier's in the best spot to get him. So, like, if Xavier somehow ends up with David Johnson in this class, that would be one of the most surprising things I've seen in Xavier recruiting the last few years. It felt like, I mean, if had you said that in April, it would have been the most ridiculous thing to bring up.
I would have laughed in your face.
Right, and now I'm like, no. I don't know.
Like, you know where that kid lives, right?
Exactly, but now, like, the longer this thing goes on, and I know it to a certain extent, it just feels exactly like the Paul Scruggs situation, where it's going to happen, it's just a matter of time eventually, you know, the kid just wants to feel the love and be comfortable with everything. But at the same time, we always talk about, well, if you've had this many chances to commit, and the school has led for however long, and you still haven't committed, what are you waiting for? And it starts to become, you know, a little bit of a question or a problem for that team. So we'll have to watch the David Johnson situation closely. It's not one I was expecting to care about in July and now August, but here we are. I'm interested. So certainly one to watch for the fans as well. Do you think I'm interested, after landing Daniel Ramsey, does it get harder for this staff to land another big in this class? I mean, meaning, are some of these other top bigs going to look and say, like, you already took a big in my class, I don't know that I want to be the second big?
See, I think one more is fine, because no kid views themselves as a center.
Right, everyone thinks they're the forward.
Yeah, so, you know, like, I'm sure Xavier couldn't come within, like, 10 miles of saying the word center to Daniel Ramsey.
Mm-hmm.
I think one more, it's pretty simple. Like, Ramsey will be like, oh, Fremantle will be the center, I'm going to be the two guard. You know, like, that's just a reality of recruiting.
Yeah, they're all
facing guys.
But
after you get that second one, I think it becomes pretty difficult.
Is this the reason possibly why Robert Jones and Jalen Thomas are still really intriguing to the staff? I mean, obviously they liked him and they've been tracking him for a while, but do you think because those two guys are a little bit more developmental and maybe have lower level offers that they become a little more enticing because it might be easier to get them along with another guy like Daniel Ramsey?
Yeah, I do think there's something to that. Especially a kid like Robert Jones, who it's been said, like, you will redshirt. Like, understand you're not playing. And to Robert's credit, he's perfectly okay with that. He understands what he is. He understands his situation. I don't know if Jalen would quite react the same way to that. But, you know, I do think in a way, yes, that can kind of be to their benefit. For a couple different reasons. One, they're not going to scare any kid off. And two, they'd be at least theoretically more comfortable with what they'd be told, like, you're not the guy.
Right. anything else, you know, in terms of specific prospects that we haven't mentioned yet that you think's worth bringing up here in 2019?
I would say, like, I know Zach Fremantle's not a name a lot of Xavier fans are as familiar with, but I think, like, if you gave the staff truth serum, it might be like, if you could only get one more kid, who would it be? Fremantle might be the answer. I mean, they really love him, and he's a heck of a player, and he can do a lot of different things. One interesting thing about Fremantle, his second jump is really impressive, and that's so important for a big guy. And I think that's one way he's really separated himself from other bigs in this class.
And it really makes that, you know, 4-day period where you've got him and Trey Jackson coming in at the same time basically interesting, because, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago when we were in the middle of July, the name I heard every time I talked to people around the program was Trey Jackson. It felt like Trey Jackson had a ton of momentum, and he might be kind of their top target on the board at that point. So those two guys, both the way they've kind of played this thing out and the way they stood out in July in front of the staff, I think they're two of the top targets. Really going to be interesting to sort of see how their visits play off one another.
What's really interesting right now is the way this has worked. Every big they're recruiting seems to be in, if they're not in decision-making mode, they're getting damn close to it. And every guard seems to be like, coach, just chill.
Yeah.
I'm taking 3 or 4 visits. It's like, it's just weird the way that's worked out.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, this class, what they've already got in Elias King and Daniel Ramsey, I don't think anyone would argue with you that they're off to a great start, but there's still work that needs to be done, because this is like one of those program-building classes. We've talked about it a few times, the way you had those classes come through, like 2014, where you really needed to reload with not just a couple really good players, the impact guys, but numbers. You need 3 or 4 program-type players that are going to impact your team for the future. And then you've already got Dwan Odom in 2020, who is a big-time recruit. You can really shoot for the stars with what you have left in 2020 after this 2019 class, but they have to make sure they get another contributor, at least, if not two of them, that are going to be solid players for the next 3 to 4 years at Xavier.
Yeah, this is the program building class. The next class, you're shooting for the final 4 building class, but this is your program building class.
Without a doubt.
And not that Xavier needs to build their program people, but you do need bodies on your roster that are going to be there and that are going to help you win.
The last thing I did want to bring up here, outside of recruiting, if anyone's still listening to this, it's been a very information-filled podcast, but I feel like we're flowing pretty quickly. We're not wasting too much time, so that's good. Team 97, which, Brian, I know you're a huge fan of them calling themselves Team 97, even though it's actually the 98th year of Xavier basketball, as we found out recently, thanks to Andy McWilliams, I believe. We've been hearing some things since they've been into workouts. You know, they're back home now. They before classes start for the fall semester, but they got done with the summer semester. They were going through workouts. They had a little more on court time this year than they have in past years. So there's a little bit more information to be had. And I think we've both heard the same thing a lot, and that's Zach Hankins is really turning some heads inside the Cintas Center.
Yeah, I actually think he's a better player than Hakeem Olajuwon, based on what I'm told. Pretty sure he's going to be the number one pick in the NBA draft. It's honestly been incredible. Even like people who are genuinely very negative about players, I'm not going to name names. You know who you are. even that person's like, damn, I love that Hankins kid. And he actually used a different term, but I can't say it on the podcast.
Hanky McSpanky, I think, is what he called him.
Yeah, something like that. But Zach has turned heads in a big, big way, and everybody who's seen a workout, and to be fair, I haven't seen one, has been just saying how good he is and how he's unbelievable. One thing I was told is he's the most mobile big guy I've ever seen. And I'm like, well, you know, there's a few of those in the NBA who are pretty good now, coach. But yeah, they say his mobility is unbelievable at 6'11 or 7 foot or whatever he is. And it's going to be interesting. I think he'll come off the bench to start, but they're talking about being able to play him at the 4 just because he can guard anybody. You can switch screens with him. They say all the shot blocking stuff translates. there's been a lot of excitement about Zach Hankins, to put it mildly.
Yeah, and I've heard the same thing, that they think they can play two bigs because of his mobility and his you know, because he can really defend and really move, and he can score. I find it hard to believe that they'll actually play that lineup very often, simply because they only have two centers. And, I mean, unless, like, Dontarius James is going to be a center or something for them, and we just don't know that yet, and he's going to play minutes as a freshman, I don't think when one of your centers is Tyreek Jones, you can afford to play your other center too many minutes alongside him. Like, because someone's going to have to spell Tyreek Jones when he's in foul trouble, when he's out of breath after running up and down the court three times. Like, I find it hard to believe they'll play that lineup that much just because they don't have the three big man rotation this year. But I've heard the same thing, and it's interesting. And there's no question that people are just gushing about Zach Hankins. And the one part about that that's interesting to me is, obviously, we're being a little bit tongue-in-cheek. Like, we know what summer praise means, and we'll learn a little bit more when we get into practices, and then a whole lot more when we actually start playing some games. But a lot of times when you get this ridiculous praise where people are just over-the-top hyping a kid, they're sitting out the next year. You know, like, they don't actually have to play that year. People are really bold with the way they're talking about Zach Hankins for a kid who is going to be on the court playing actual games in 2 months for Xavier.
Yeah, it's just rare. It's just rare. And it'll be interesting to see just how good he is. You know, Rick, I don't know if you've seen a workout. I haven't seen one.
No, I haven't been to a workout. Yeah, those are typically closed. I mean, you can get in occasionally, but they're usually early in the morning and they're closed for the most part. And I'll be honest, like, people love to talk about it. And we're bringing it up here because the fans love it and we've got to give them something. But there's just not a whole lot that can be taken from these workouts, people. Like, shooting wide open jump shots, installing offense, and, you know, getting conditioning in isn't exactly like a great test of how the team is coming together. So we'll have a lot more information. Don't worry, I will be doing practice reports as often as I possibly can when real practice starts, and we'll get a much better feel for these guys. But going through the grad transfers, because that's is going to be such an important part of this team, and people are just getting their first looks at them. It seems like with Ryan Wellage, he first got there that first week, maybe week and a half, 2 weeks, people are like, this ain't great. As he was having a little trouble, I think, adjusting to the athleticism and quickness of some of the guys he was around, but also just like you're adjusting to an entire new environment, right? Like, you're at a new school, and I don't think he's like super outgoing kid from what I understand. So
he's definitely not.
Yeah, he was just getting used to his teammates and everything as well. And it seems like as he's come out of that shell and the whole game has slowed down for him a little bit, he's doing what he was expected to do. He's shooting the ball well, and it seems like people are pretty high on him as well and think he'll definitely contribute.
Yeah, I think there's now no doubt that he's going to be able to play a good role. Now, that role's not going to be to defend and rebound. But, you know, on the offensive end, I think a lot of people are saying he's going to be able to really, really bring a lot to the team, a team that desperately is going to need shooting. They are now very confident that he's fine and he's not going to be overmatched.
And then the third graduate transfer, Kyle Castlin from Columbia. I mean, he kind of comes in with it's tough to judge him as much as anyone because he didn't even play a huge. He was injured a lot of the year at Columbia and has been injured multiple times throughout his career. And he didn't really play a huge role for them when he got back. He was more of like a role player. So it's a little bit difficult to figure out how he's going to translate. But it seems like the reviews have been pretty good on him as well so far. It seems like he does a lot of things fairly well. Not necessarily a standout at anything, but plays hard at both ends and will be able to definitely give them minutes.
Yeah, I think there's even a thought that he could start, depending on do they want to go with Castlin as a starter and put Najee at the four, or do they want to go with Wellage as a starter and keep Najee at the three? I think that's kind of the only debate in the starting lineup at the moment. I think a lot of it is really like Castlin's leadership, kind of intangibles. Will guard's going to play hard, and then they're hoping he can make open shots. Now, that's to be determined. I don't think he's come in and lit it up in terms of shot making, but he's shown that he can. So I think that's the question, but I think they're very happy with they were very comfortable with him potentially even being a starter.
There's no question that Zach Hankins has gotten the most praise when you've been talking to people, but the other name that is without a doubt, especially out of the returning guys, that has been talked about very favorably in terms of his development and the progress he's made in the offseason already is Paul Scruggs. I've heard nothing but good things about how he's looked.
Yeah, he's shooting the ball really well right now, for whatever that's worth. And he's more locked in. You know, Paul was always a kid. Basketball doesn't come easy to Paul. He's just a tough kid who's athletic and plays hard as hell. But basketball, it's not natural for him. So he had a longer adjustment last year than I think he wanted to have, and certainly than the coaches wanted him to have. But I think now he's comfortable. He knows how to play. He's figured out what it takes to be effective in college basketball, and I think that's shining through right now.
Yeah, I made the comment to someone the other day when we were talking about Paul, and I was like, I mean, if he can have the kind of jump that Quentin Gooden had from freshman to sophomore year, and they're like, well, hold on. Like, Quentin made a jump, but Quentin didn't have an offseason to do any of this. He's like, Paul's been working his ass off the entire offseason and has not taken a day off. They're like, he's going to take a bigger jump than Quentin did from freshman to sophomore year. And I'm like, well, if that's the case, one, he's going to be pretty damn good, and two, that's really going to help next year's team out. So I'm definitely anxious to see Paul Scruggs when we get back to practice. Two other guys that I wanted to bring up just because I've been asked about them a lot. I really don't think either one's going to play a big role, but I do think one of them will have to carve out some type of role just because of depth and numbers and the way minutes work in college basketball. But I think it's getting to be that kind of situation we've seen a few other times, most recently with Kaiser Gates and Mackenday London, and that's Elias Harden and Keontae Kennedy, I think are both kind of battling it out for that. I don't know if it's necessarily the eighth man, but certainly that extra guard spot. One of the two are going to get some minutes, and I think the other is going to be left out for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly probably shaping up that way. And quite honestly, the guy who's going to get the minutes is probably the one who's going to shoot the ball the best.
Yep.
And we're to be determined on that, to be sure. You know, I've been told Elias got better. Now, does better mean he's ready to play? I don't know. Keontae's a little banged up right now, but, you know, he got some positive, you know, decently positive reviews before his injury surfaced, so to speak. And it'll be interesting to see. I think that one will be – that's even one that could change during the season. We don't know for sure. But certainly Xavier's going to need another guard. And they're going to need one of those guys to make shots on a fairly consistent basis. And both of them are going to have a golden opportunity to win those minutes. It's not like Elias did anything last year to put Keontae behind the eight ball. So if Keontae can come in and you know, overtake Elias, so be it. If Elias can hold him off, Xavier hopes that means Elias has really improved.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a big opportunity for either one of them because you find some minutes on this team, you find a role, you show you can play. Well, you may have some value going forward. If neither one of them are able to do that at all, probably doesn't say very good things for either one of their futures in terms of them being recruited over and going forward. So it's early in their development. They still have time, obviously. But this is a big opportunity for both of those guys this year. And I'm interested to watch that battle for who gets that spot because I think it'll say a lot about both of their careers at Xavier going forward. One other guy I wanted to mention, and I want to be clear about this. Look, they don't have a lot of numbers, so hell, maybe he will play a role. We'll see how many guys they land for 2019 because he's going to have to sit out this year. But Miles Hansen, the Columbia transfer who is going to be a walk-on, he was actually playing at Columbia. He's going to walk on at Xavier. I've been told simply he's the best walk-on Xavier's had, and you know, in at least since the Chris Mack era, since most of the current people have been around the program. 6'7", athletic, plays hard. Again, I don't think that really matters, but at least they have an extra practice body for this year and then a guy that will be available as a walk-on going forward.
Yeah, I haven't heard too much about him, I'll be honest, but you know, if he can be a valuable practice player, that means he fills a role and he's doing something good. And obviously, I guess you don't technically have scholarships in the Ivy League, but in essence, he was a Division I scholarship player. I mean, Kevin Feeney would probably be pissed off if he listens to this podcast. Apparently, he's a better player than Kevin Feeney.
Yeah. Is Kevin Feeney the best walk-on during the Mac era?
Who else would it be? Duckett?
No, but I mean, Andrew Taylor was a walk-on, right?
No. Oh, no. Trust me. I got cussed out. He was not a walk-on.
Oh, okay.
He was going to walk on to allow Jordan Crawford to come on scholarship. However, Sean left, which meant Kevin Parham wasn't coming, and Derek Brown left, and that reopened the scholarship that Andrew Taylor was on.
That's right. So no other walk-ons really played? I thought there was another one. This is terrible that I can't think of it. I thought there was another walk-on that played. Anyway, doesn't matter. Kevin Feeney, Nighthawk.
Keenan Christensen?
Well, I mean, that's going back a ways. But yeah, Keenan Christensen, I think, would maybe take the cake there.
Simons, aka Sassy.
You know who? What's the kid that could defend? Landon Amos got kicked off the team.
Walk on,
who played an actual role and got kicked off the team. Not easy to do both of those things.
The shortest book ever written, actually.
Outside of those names, I mean, again, not a ton to be taken from what's going on so far with the team. The only other thing I will say, I think both of us have heard, and it's one of those things like you hear about every team. Like coaches will say this about every offseason, every team, that, oh, our guys are really working hard. They've been in the weight room. They've been getting after it. But I think we've both heard now from people that like aren't coaches and aren't inside the program and aren't going to pump up their guys no matter what. But like other people who just work at Xavier or work inside the Cintas Center that happen to see these guys a lot and are around the program are like, dude, these guys are getting after it. Like, just really going hard this offseason. So, I mean, I think everyone's really happy with the way things have gone in terms of the work these guys have put in this year.
Legitimately, this is no BS. I was down in Cincinnati probably a month ago, maybe. I don't remember exactly when it was. Maybe 5 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever it was. And I walk in the loading dock entrance of the Cintas Center. And I see one of the maintenance guys. I don't know if he's a maintenance guy, a janitor. I don't quite – building operations person, whatever his role is. He got a lot of keys. That's all I know. But it's a guy, you know, I've talked to in the past. He's certainly seen me around for years. He goes, man, these guys are working harder than I've ever seen. And lo and behold, you know, in the auxiliary gym was Scruggs shooting and Keontae shooting. And I'm like, oh, all right, you know. And it's just an odd thing to hear. But then when you keep hearing it over and over from different people, it's like, wow, okay. These guys are working their butts off. I've been told the culture there right now is as good as it's ever been.
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of it. I think, one, the guys were really excited for Steele to get the job. And the fact that that went the way they wanted to and they felt like they had some ownership with it because Greg Christopher met with them. He listened to them seriously. It wasn't just like a, oh yeah, my office door is open, but screw you guys type of thing. We're not letting you pick our coach. Like, he actually listened to them, and then it went their way. So it probably felt good for them. They felt like they were listened to. I think everything went as well as it could have possibly gone with the changing of coaching staffs. And then in addition to that, the voices, the leaders coming back, the guys who are taking ownership of this team, we have Quentin Gooden, who has a tremendous work ethic and is a really high character kid and just kind of a no-nonsense, shut-up-and-work type of kid. Anyone that you talk to about Tyreek Jones will praise his personality, his character, and the type of locker room guy he is. So when those are kind of the two guys leading you, the other guys just fall in line. And it seems like that's, from what I've been told, that's how it's going. Those two guys have just sort of set the tone for how the team is going to work, and everybody else have kind of fallen in line, and just that's the expectation. That's how they're going to do things. And it sounds positive. The reviews definitely sound positive about this team. They've got a lot of question marks to answer, but as it stands on August 10th at 6:40 p.m., I think, you know, everyone inside the Cintas Center feels about as good as they possibly could about the way things are going.
Definitely. I don't, you know, this we're not saying this is going to be a number one seed. I think it's pretty clearly this team is not going to be as good as it was last year, but there are reasons for optimism.
Yeah, and it's right. It's a good year in the Big East to not know what your team's going to be like, because everyone's in the same boat. I mean, Villanova, I still expect to be the best team, but they have their own questions to answer as well. So everyone's answering questions. I'm looking forward to practice starting so we can actually get into some of these storylines and unpack all of this and see what this team has.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting – it'll be one of the more interesting seasons to monitor, I think.
Yeah, definitely. From a coverage standpoint, I'm really looking forward to it because there are so many storylines, and a lot about the future of the program is going to be sort of set in place this year. They'll put the building blocks down. So I think that does it for this edition of the Dane and Victory podcast. For the legend, Brian Snow, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.